some things that we've seen and just kind of review some things. And it'll just take a little quickly because we have a little lunch pending. Let's start by just looking at what's in a name. Just review yourself. Bethlehem means, everyone, house of bread. House of bread. So it's going to be a picture there of God's provision, right? God's provision for his people because Bethlehem is in Judah, and Judah means a pleasant place. Then we introduced our characters, Elimelech. His name is God is my king. Melech is the word for Hebrew word for king, and El is the word for God, El. And the I in there apparently is a personal pronoun, my, something like that. So we get God my king or God is my king. We get Kilion and Mahlon. I can't remember which was which, but basically sick and pining, sick and dying, sick and weak. So those are really great names. Naomi, her name means pleasant one or sweet, pleasant. Ruth, do I ever give her what her name means? Huh? Friend, that's right. Yeah, said in chapter 1. Friend, okay? And then Orpah. I don't know if I can't remember if we had a meaning for that name. Let's make it for talker. Host. Her name means talking host. No, I don't know. Boaz, his name was some thought it was mighty or some thought it was alacrity, but mighty, you could say. And then finally, so-and-so, right? Clyde, so-and-so. His name, he was deliberately unnamed, just kind of an irrelevant one. And we just kind of look at these names, characters, especially these people, and we kind of think, well, which one are you? Especially in chapter 1, fascinating chapter, we have Elimelech, we have Naomi, and we have those two boys, and we have the two girls, Ruth and Orpah and the two boys. And you know, we can try to identify, what are we like? How many of you are like Elimelech? We're like Elimelech, but there is a problem that goes down. We have some need, and we're thinking, you know, I got control, I'm taking care of it, looking out for my family, I've got my budget, I've got my bottom line here, I've got to make decisions, I'm thinking through, and you know, Jesus, if I need you, I'll call you, but otherwise, we got it under control. And we make these kind of decisions, we step out, and we're doing things, but not necessarily with that divine viewpoint. And we're like Elimelech then, and we're navigating and driving our family, we think we're making excellent decisions, but we're really independent from the Lord. Ever been there? Maybe we're like Elimelech. Maybe you're like Naomi. Naomi, at least one thing is she's honest. She comes back to Bethlehem. Don't call me pleasant, call me bitter. And she's upset with God. She feels that God has dealt harshly with her. She has been involved in some of these decisions or has gone through some trials, but she's forgotten perhaps some divine perspective here. And she, at least though, is honest. And she's not faking it. How are you doing today, Naomi? I'm not doing well. My life actually is pretty bad. She's telling the truth. How about Orpah? She takes this thing so far. She's connecting here with Naomi, but when she has a choice to go further, she goes back to her origin. She goes back to the world she came from. Often some believers are like that, right? We're going to get saved. They follow after Jesus for a little bit, but they don't get what they thought they would get. They're looking for that boyfriend. They don't get a boyfriend, so I'm out of here. I don't get that girlfriend. I'm out of here. I don't get this job or whatever. And so we turn around and we go back. So maybe we're like Orpah. Maybe hopefully we're like Boaz, though, or like Ruth, as these were the positive examples of upright and walking by faith. So we ask, what's your name? Notice how each of the extraordinary characters in the book are offset by others who are very ordinary. Very ordinary people. Naomi and Elimelech. Elimelech, apparently a godly man, but he makes a poor decision. He never recovers from it. We presume that this was all God's discipline that happens to him and his family. But Naomi, we find her in a very tough shape here in chapter 1. She's bitter. Yet here in Moab, a godly woman in ways that are evidenced by her daughters-in-law. Why would Ruth want to stick with and follow after Naomi? Why would she want to do that? Partly because your God will be my God. We understand the faith element there. But partly because we must assume then that Naomi must have been a godly woman to attract that kind of loyalty and that love from Ruth. There must have been some testimony by Naomi expressed in some way. And then, though she gets discouraged and she is now bitter, we see her love for Ruth even, and her provision and what she does there in chapters 3 and 4, going beyond the normal as well. How about Ruth and Orpah? We see a real contrast there. Two women, two choices, two predicaments, same situation. They're in the same scenario, but they make two very different decisions. Significant decisions. And in Boaz and so-and-so, right? One, willing to meet the needs of others, willing to follow God's law, willing to do what is honorable, willing to make a sacrifice. We see Boaz willing to do all of that, and so-and-so is not. We see some extraordinary things going on in the life of Ruth, the life of Boaz, even in Naomi. We see those, and yet we see right next to them someone who's put there that is pretty ordinary. And again, that's a very good learning, teaching tool. We just look at that, and before you leave, you can look at that and say, now, Lord, which one am I more like? What side of that would I be on, the ordinary or the extraordinary? Letter C, we see the principal love story, as we've mentioned before several times, between Ruth and Naomi. And the Hebrew term hesed, which is that loyal love, plays a significant role, as that is exactly the love that Ruth expresses to Naomi. It's exactly the love that Boaz is so attracted to. It's that very love that Boaz displays practically in his act of redemption toward Ruth. It's God's love, this hesed love, which is loyal love. And it's a close associate to the term grace in the New Testament. Treating one graciously. Treating one with a profound love. Undeserved. Letter D, all the prayers of the book of Ruth are requests of blessing for others. There's these various prayers that are like the blessings where they, like in chapter 4 we saw one. May you become famous in Bethlehem, they prayed, they said, about Boaz. Did that come true? That became true. The women around the community of Naomi said the same about that little boy. May he be famous in Bethlehem. Was that true? Yes, because that little boy, his son was going to be David. Right? And so these are the kind of prayers, these blessings, these things, that are given out, all of them were coming true. And they're all for others. They're blessings for others. Prayers for others. And they come to pass. And we can learn a lot about our prayer life there, right? Our prayer life, are we praying for others? And we're not just praying just about ourselves and our needs and our trials. Yes, you pray about those. That is legitimate. But our prayer life should be equally dominated by prayer for others. Our friends are... our family, or people, fellow believers, and so forth. Maybe the trials they're going through, the difficulties they're going through, maybe to the encouragement they've been to you. You pray for others. And you can see, as you keep those prayers, as you take note of those prayers, you can see over time how God indeed answers those prayers. God indeed is a faithful God, and He answers those prayers. If you're single, we know you don't have to go looking for a mate, do you? God will bring them to you. God will bring that mate. Especially when you're in the place of blessing. What's the place of blessing again? Just enjoying the will of God? Involved in what you're doing is on to the Lord? You're in a community of people? You're hearing the Word of God? You're fellowshipping around this type of environment? That's where you're going to meet someone who's like-minded, and God's going to usher someone there, in time, on His good terms, on His time. The person who will meet that need. What is Matthew 6:33? We know that verse. You know it? Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. And the all these things in that context are things like food and clothing and shelter, physical needs. In other words, God is a God of provision. God is aware of your needs, and you can count on God to meet your needs. He's not a Scrooge. He doesn't like to see you frustrated. He's not up there laughing and enjoying how you're wandering and banging your head and don't know where to go or what you're so forth. He's a loving God. He's a good God. And he wants to provide blessing even. And often what hinders that is we take ourselves out of the place of blessing. We take ourselves out of the will of God. We start taking matters into our own hands. We're impatient. We think that God, we're frustrated with God. I mean, what's up with God? He doesn't do what he's told. Right? And then he's not able, he's not free to bring along in our life the things he wants to bring along. And so, if you're single, the good news is the Lord wants you to just operate under Hebrews 12:2, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. To think like Paul thought in 2 Corinthians 5, my aim is to be well-pleasing to him. And as you are following after the Lord, looking unto Jesus, and being used, as Ruth was serving and being used, as Boaz was being used, as he was also serving, doing what he should have been doing in the will of God, the Lord is able to cross paths and bring about these random chance meetings, if so it would seem. But you see, you have the Master God behind it all. We see that in letter F, there's a tremendous value to learn about what to learn what to appreciate in a potential mate. As we can say, there's something about Ruth, right? Boaz was looking and he said, there's something about Ruth. What did he see in Ruth? Said it over and over. Was it her external features? Never said that. Never emphasized that. We don't know what Ruth looked like. What was it about Ruth? Her character, wasn't it? She was a submissive, humble woman. She was willing to serve. She was gleaning. She did it with dignity. She was in the place she should be, and it was well known about her tremendous chesed love that she had for her mother-in-law, and the decision she made to follow her mother-in-law, and to stick by her. And so Boaz sees those things, and he says, that's good. That's good. He has some maturity to appreciate the finer things. And so, it's the same for the ladies, as you're looking at men. There's something about Boaz, isn't there? He was a gentleman. He had a job. He walked upright. Right? Had a lot of advantages. But he also was a godly man. He also had a real appreciation for what was the honorable thing to do. He never took advantage of her. He never manipulated. You could see that he was a leader. You could see that he was a good businessman and the people around him had respect for him and he had a place in that community. And you can see that these were qualities that God was developing in this man. Ruth could see that she could be led by this guy, even in the spiritual realm. They had a spiritual fellowship and conversation. That's what you want to appreciate in that potential mate. Backsliding is serious business, isn't it, we saw? We think of the weight of the decisions that you make. Elimelech made some decisions and never recovered. That doesn't mean that always happens, we're not saying that, but we are saying that there is certainly connections and accountability. We reap what we sow, we understand these principles. And so even though when we backslide, we never think, you know, I think I'm just going to be carnal here tomorrow, one day, really busy weekend, and I'm pretty tired, and I feel like just checking out. I'm just going to just be carnal Monday, maybe Tuesday. How many of us think that way? We all might think that way, right? I'm just not going to, at times, we just, you know, put our guard down. But what happens is, come Monday night or Tuesday, and it's time now to go back to fellowship and enjoying and serving the Lord. Is that what you always do? No. Because one kind of decision often begets another type of similar decision. And so come Tuesday, it's like, I don't know, you know, I'm just kind of enjoying this or whatever. We think we're happy. And that becomes a longer period of time and longer period of time where you become less sensitive to the things of the Spirit of God. Because there's pleasure in sin for a season. There's deceit there as well. And then maybe you end up being defeated. And then you feel unworthy. And because you're defeated and you feel unworthy, we hesitate then to go to the grace of God. And it's still our pride, but then the time of our carnality and backsliding has become longer and longer. And like Jeff shared in his testimony last night, there were years, you know? I'm sure if you would have asked him when he was in 10th grade or 11th grade, hey, how would you like to take a 8-year hiatus and be miserable in the world? You think he'd go, yeah, I'm there. Would he have done that? No. But Satan just takes us one step, right? Oh, that first step looks attractive. Ooh, next step, right? But then pretty soon you're in. Pretty soon you're defeated. Pretty soon there's been a sacrifice of what is valuable. But the good news is God is gracious, isn't he? Those years, however long they might be, when you're backslidden, you can return. You can enjoy fellowship again with the Lord at a point in time, at any time. You can say, I am wrong. You can recognize that Christ has already died for your sin. You can recognize that in the family of God, this is an issue that has been paid for, so that now the issue is simply family forgiveness. And like the prodigal son, the Lord is certainly willing and wanting to forgive and to have fellowship with you. But he's not going to chase us into the ruts and the ditches of the world. And so he remains, and he walks, and he paces, and he waits. Decisions we make, they're very important, aren't they? We never want to be casual and think, ah, it's just a little sin. I can 1 John 1:9 it away, right? This can cause often long periods of spiritual drought, as there is deceitfulness involved. We see the value of a good testimony, though, don't we? The value of a good testimony in Ruth, even in Boaz, as you become known for those things, the people, the community are willing to support and bless them. We see that this testimony that Ruth had is what went before her when it came to Boaz. There's a lot of value in that testimony. And you see again, if you're choosing to sow your oats and live in the world, what kind of testimony is going before you? And when it's time for the serious things of life and settling down and marriage and these kinds of things, your testimony definitely can play a part. And there's certainly a lot of value being in the place of blessing, isn't there? We've seen with Ruth and Boaz. Now let's consider the prophetic nature of the book. You know, there's just a very beautiful picture here of a prophetic sequence. If you think of Naomi, just can jot down, let's let her be a picture of the nation of Israel. Here is Naomi. She is happily in her promised land, Israel. Pleasant, in a pleasant place, a house of bread. Elimelech, God is my king, representing as well this land, this nation. But then Israel comes under famine. Famine, as we remember Pastor Oxford mentioned, almost always in the Bible, is seen as a form of judgment, and particularly as it relates to Israel, as God had told them and warned them of physical discipline that's going to happen if they do not walk in obedience to Him. And so Israel is under discipline. She's driven from her land. She's out of her land. Naomi now, Israel, is in Moab, out of her land, suffering tragedy upon tragedy and suffering. Isn't that a good picture of what has happened to the nation of Israel over the centuries? And all that time that there's suffering is going on, God is preparing a bride for Israel's Redeemer. And who's that? Ruth then is a picture of the Gentile bride and of the church. Naomi then returns with Ruth to the land, but has lost possession of it. And that's like Israel today, off now, returned in her land, but has lost possession of the actual biblical promised boundaries. And is waiting for a Redeemer. Is waiting for that land and that kingdom that has been promised in the Abrahamic covenant to come to reality and to fruition. And that same Redeemer who's going to redeem that land and is going to come and restore the nation of Israel and have the proper boundaries in the land, that same Redeemer is the Redeemer of Ruth, the church, right? And is the Redeemer of the Gentile bride. And that is Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ will come, and He will redeem Israel by way of her land, and He will redeem the church. And so we see a great picture here. And what is going on before the Redeemer comes in Ruth chapter 4 is finalized? What is Ruth doing in chapter 2 as the church? She's harvesting. Great is the harvest, right? And that harvest could be a picture of evangelism and God adding to the church in a sense. She's at work. So anyway, there's often these overtones, these pictures here that can come to play as well. So Ruth, this marvelous book that begins with a funeral and ends with a marriage and a birth of a baby. It begins with famine and it ends with a fullness. And I thought I would just leave it up to you now in these last few minutes as we think of others, other gleanings, other things that you've seen or want to just raise your hand and just share now. We'll finish our retreat this way for the next 5-10 minutes and we'll just allow you to share a gleaning that you've taken from the book of Ruth. So now we're putting you on the spot.